This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Open for Business is powered by BossBolay.com, Malaysia's first online company secretary.
Good morning. Welcome to Open for Business. This is Audrey Raj. On the show today, I'm going to be speaking with the founder and technical director of Kuala Lumpur City FC, Jerry Dinesh. Now, KL City FC is leading the league when it comes to independent sports teams moving away from dependency of state funds. They run the futsal club like a business and recently even introduced pay-per-view for fans to watch live sports, effectively changing the culture of fan participation and monetization of futsal. And they're doing all this to channel funds back to the clubs for sports sustainability. Jerry, very excited to have you on. Welcome to Open for Business.
Thank you, Adrian. Good morning to you.
Now, let's start with a little background into how the club was born and its journey thus far as a futsal club.
Yeah, well, so it goes back to about... The club was founded in 2010, but I think I need to take you back a little bit on my involvement in this kind of football startup. So there was a bunch of boys that wanted to play futsal, and it was a pay-to-play kind of concept where they come every day and pay to, for the court rental and stuff. But they kind of approached me and told me that they would like to go to the next level. So I engaged with these boys. And eventually, after a year of training, we played in the qualification rounds of the Football Association of Malaysia's Pro League. And we made it to the league in 2017. Mm. And from there, of course, from that, we found a shelf club at that time, which was Kuala Lumpur City FC, and then attached ourselves. It's like getting a shelf company to start one of your startups. Yeah. Mm. Basically, that's how we started.
Right. And for those who don't follow futsal, maybe you want to give us an idea of how the team is faring today. Like performance-wise, are you guys up there in the top three of the league, or how popular is the team?
Okay, so basically in 2017, when we first qualified for the league was still in a semi-professional status. Mm. Our debut season, we finished a few points short of podium. We were fourth. And then in 2018, we were fifth. And then in 2019, the league went fully professional. And I think our struggle started here.
Right.
Because from a commercial scale now, the numbers, the cost of operation has just gone up, right? So we didn't do too well in 2019. We actually finished last, right? Mm. But there was no relegation because it was the first year of the professional league. And then 2 years of pandemic. And this year we finished 12th out of 15. But from a perspective of points, the teams from the fifth spot right up to the 12th spot are only in a variance of 2 points.
Right.
This is due to the pandemic. You know, we got hit hard by COVID, mm. and games delayed, and we had too many players out. But it was a good season for us to get back into tempo. Mm. So that's where the team stands now. We are built to compete team. We find development players and try to push them into the pro league. That helps us maintain our costs. We try to focus more on the quality of training rather mm-hmm. than buying quality players and spending a lot of money. We're in the right track, I think, for the next 2 or 3 years. Our plan is to kind of secure the title in the next 5 years. It's a realistic plan.
Wow.
More importantly, commercially, we are getting more stable. We have a lot of things going on. We have our own court and stuff like that we are generating revenue. So, where we are in public, I think how people measure it is like we have about 10,000 followers on social media, and some of our games we have up to 100 over 1,000, 200,000 mm-hmm. people watching the highlights and stuff.
Nice. So, you know, talking about commercialization, how much does it take to fund a club like this, you know, and how is it usually done? You know, do players get together and support each other before finding a sponsor? And how did you guys do it?
Yeah, so it's quite a beautiful process, I would say, because everybody knows the bottom of the pyramid, which is where we turn up on a court and we all pay 10 or 20 ringgit and we play, right? And I used to do this as a young boy as well. But nobody knows the next step, right? And the thing, the beauty about football is that everybody dreams big. They always want to go big. But there's a gap on knowledge on how to turn that amateur scene into a professional scene. I kid you not, it's not easy. It's not easy. It's not as easy as just taking a bunch of social boys and trying to go pro, because there's a lot of other things involved, like preparation of play and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, how it is done is that once we move away from the pay-to-play scheme and we qualify to the pro league, then we start knocking on sponsors' doors and telling them about how much reach our product has, and try to tell them, okay, listen, we had in 2019 in the pro league year about 1 million eyeballs viewed on our product, which is our jerseys, our airball, and stuff like that. And this is what we go out and sell, right? But again, it's not easy. It's not easy. The market's pretty tough for stuff like this. But yeah, we've generated a fair amount of revenue from that. And beyond that, we sell merchandise. We sell our jerseys and stuff. It's not many. We get about 300-400 pieces a year, but it helps us out with our overheads. And this has slowly transitioned from pay to play. And maybe in the first year, we're almost like not paying to play, but we're not really making money. Like, you know, we just have enough to play. That means the boys are playing for free. And today, after the fourth year, the fourth season, most of the boys are paid to play. And most of the coaches receive a decent allowance as well. But we have a lot of good people and good volunteers who are not so focused on money. So makes the process a little bit easier.
Yeah. All for the love of the sport, right?
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, there are clubs, I'm sure in your league, or teams that are state funded. How much of an advantage do they have? And was this ever a consideration for you when you were building this team?
Well, my passion is coaching. I must share that. And I love being on the court and with the players. But being kind of like indirectly forced into something like this, I've had to learn the commercial aspect of things. And to answer your question, we merely spend maybe about 200,000 a season, and the top team spends about 1.2 million, right? So it is challenging because they readily are available to buy talent. They basically decide to buy talent and compete, which is very difficult for a team that is building talent to compete, because it's a tough, when you get on the court, it's very tough. You're playing against very established players. But it's a journey. It's a journey. The idea here is that we want to stay in the game. You know, winning it may not be possible in the beginning, but the idea is to stay in the game. And as we stay in the game, we increase our commercial value, and that increases our sustainability. And that allows us to spend maybe a little bit more next year. And then get a bit more quality on the court as well. Just to share with you, next year we're capable of signing players on 3-year contracts and 5-year contracts, and this gives us a lot of depth, because we players like this confidence. You know, they want to come to a team where, okay, they have their own venue, they have their own hostel, and salaries for 5 years. So most teams, they pay very high, but it's on like a very short term contract. So we're telling them, listen, we'll give you a longer-term contract. We want to focus on the sport. We want you to train every day. We want you to be pro. But, you know, this is our plan. So, yeah. But the gap, the financial gap is big. It's big because state-funded teams, I mean, it's easy, isn't it? Money comes and then they just spend it. But I believe that module, FIFA is trying to change that module. They're trying to make clubs sustainable and profitable. And it's a big challenge for Malaysia. And a small club like us have taken that challenge. And we've been around for like about 4 or 5 years, which is quite positive, you know.
Yeah. Right. Now, from spending something like 200K to 1.2 million on a futsal club or team, what are the sources of revenue for these teams as well? How do they make money?
You mean the state-funded teams?
No, for your team as well as the state-funded team. Yeah. Where is the money coming back into the mix?
So basically, the state-funded teams get like kind of a grant from the government, right, through the state football associations. But I'm against this because I think it's very unhealthy. It's unhealthy for the management of football itself, because there's a lot of vested interests when government grants come in. There are sometimes politicians involved. in the capacity of the team, which may be unhealthy. But for us, our revenue, to answer your question, comes basically from private sponsorships. We approach a lot of pharmaceutical brands. We had a very good sponsorship from Proviton last year. That's slowed down a bit due to the pandemic. Other than that, we have had telcos support us. And we also have a big group of following that are deeply engraved through from the time that we were children and we played futsal. And then now that I'm doing this, all my friends and that community, we have a team called Samba IFC that really supports us financially. We have some of them who are very successful in their careers today, and they don't mind giving us some money now and then. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit of a mix of everything. But ultimately, we want to get down to the fully sponsored, commercially sponsored by private
kind of model.
Yes, ultimately that. And other than that, we started pay-per-view this year. It's not been big. Malaysian culture is like, they don't like to pay for anything. They've got everything for free because in the past, the government gives them for free. In Europe, it's big. So we're trying to change the mindset. And beyond that, we have a good merchandise partner, which is Khaki Jersey. So we get our royalties from our jerseys. So we get like almost 50% of royalty from the sales of our jerseys. So these are different revenue streams. And then on match days, we have ticketing as well. We have ticketing. And just to add another big partnership that we have that creates revenue from us from this year. Data Sukan have come on board with us. These are a statistics company that are actually under a collaboration with ISN. They've come in with us and they're also participating in the management of the team. These are people who love football and you know, we jive together. And so what has happened is that they have some assets that they've kind of like shared with us. So we have an arena, KL City Arena, that is starting this month. And the revenue from that arena, which goes back to Data Sukan, a certain percentage of that will come to the team.
Right.
So in the meantime, the boys also help to organize events, upkeep of the court. We have a physiotherapy partner, which is opening a gym and a physiotherapy downstairs. And they also give job opportunities to the players, you know, because they train in the morning and the afternoon they're free. So they go to the gym and they help out do PT and stuff like that. So these are all the different revenue streams. If I were to lay it out, it's many different revenue streams. But ultimately, we want to grow to viewership, eyeballs, and selling those as to our advertising partners, basically.
Right. Okay, I don't know if you heard it, but I did. That was the halftime whistle. When we come back in the second half, we discuss monetization, more monetization opportunities in the sport, as well as entrepreneurship lessons learned in running a futsal club. You are listening to Open for Business with KL City FC. We'll be right back in just a few. BFM 89.9.
Open for Business will reopen in a few moments. Powered by BossBully.com, Malaysia's first online company secretary.
Business, football, music. BFM 89.9.
Open for Business is powered by BossBully.com, Malaysia's first online company secretary.
You are listening to Open for Business. This is Audrey Raj. Online with me today, I have the founder and technical director of Kuala Lumpur City FC, Jerry Dinesh. Now, Jerry, I understand you might not find it so funny, but I understand that you guys got a little extra publicity when Kuala Lumpur City FC won the Malaysia Cup last year. And everyone got a public holiday, right? But it wasn't really because of your club. But you know what they say, any publicity is good publicity. Was that the case for you guys?
No, not really. I mean, like, we would not like to take credit for somebody else's success. And ultimately, it's a very complex situation of naming rights. There's been a little bit of oversight, I believe, in parties in approving this name, because Kuala Lumpur City FC, the football team, who is under KLFA, ultimately they have qualified to the league with a name which is Kuala Lumpur United.
Yes.
And again, due to state funding and also, I don't know, involvement of some big personalities, somehow they thought that they could push us aside. And people look at futsal like it's a minor thing compared to football. And I respect that. We're a sport on our own. But where the structures of naming is concerned, it's wrong. And those names are actually currently being reviewed. We will provide a legal challenge towards that, but we were waiting for the My IPO decision to approve their name first, because otherwise, my solicitors think that we probably have to change too many parties in the affidavits in the future. We need to know whether the government is approving it or not, right? And then we can proceed. We put them under notice. So no, Audrey, we're not very happy that we got free publicity, okay, because at the moment they have not paid salaries to their players, and they probably just settled it. They were delayed, and the bad publicity comes along as well. So whenever we go and talk to a player, there's like, oh, KLCP, you guys, how are you financially? I mean, listen, we're not great. We struggle. We struggle too, but we are a closely knit community. None of our struggles go out to the public yet, you know, because everybody's passionate about what we do. So yeah, we're very strong in reclaiming our name. We will get it reclaimed. It's a matter of common sense, I think. So yeah, no, we don't like the publicity. We don't have anything to do with them.
And not a laughing matter as well. Yes.
No. It's been quite sensitive. Whatever happens, we appreciate and respect all our friends in football under the FIFA banner, under the AFC banner, and the FAM banner. We've discussed with FAM about this, and FAM has given us a kind of like go ahead to take the necessary legal action outside the world of football. And we shall do that, and we'll be writing to the AFC Club Licensing Committee and trying to clarify this matter. The problem is this whole exercise of renaming has taken a drastic twist in 2018. And you know, when something starts new, there's some loopholes here and there. So I believe that our case will set precedents for the future for this not allowing to happen, because logically, you can't have two clubs having the same name, irrelevant of what sport it is. More so that we are all under the footballing banner, because FIFA demands that football and futsal and women's football and beach football all fall under their banner. And they all need to operate under the entities that are under their banner. So how can there be two clubs with the same name under the same banner?
Exactly.
We will also go and play football. We will also play beach football. So I can't seem to think why they have made this mistake. But it's been done, and we'll challenge it, and we'll see what come out of it in the next year or so.
Now, Jerry, before the break, you touched a bit about going pro and then semi-pro. What are the major differences in running a team, you know, that is pro and semi-pro? And how does that impact the way, you know, the club is run and its finances as well?
Money is the difference.
Money is the difference.
Yeah, of course. So in a very simple way, when you are amateurs, you turn up and you pay to play, or you pay to train and stuff like that. But when you pro, ultimately you're expecting to for that to be a full time job, and you're paid to do something professionally. So the drastic shift is that now we have to find funds to manage operations. It's no longer a club where we turn up and we say, okay, guys, everybody pay 20 ringgit to play today. You know, instead, we're playing the players on average about, I think on the low end, the younger players get about 800, and on the high end, maybe a few thousand dollars. And we need to find this money. And so the drastic difference is that. And why I say it's money, because football is a sport, you would think that anybody goes onto the court and they have 2 feet and the opponent has 2 feet and it's level playing ground, but it's not.
No, because, it never is.
Because something that clearly differentiates two different athletes is talent, right? And talent, usually you're born with, you don't train. Like you're born with talent and then you sharpen up that talent, right? And otherwise, you love to play the sport and you're not talented, but then you train to play the sport and you can only be athletic and hardworking with whatever you do. But talent wins games. And it's a myth that people tell you hard work wins games, because hard work and talent is better, but talent wins games. And talented players get paid well. And to pull them, it's a big ask, because we don't have the kind of strong funding. So that is the drastic difference. And what happens when it went pro? You see, when it's semi-pro, we can compete. We're just below podium. When it goes pro, you get some big names coming and pumping money. There's some private funders. Slango Mac is one of them. They have a woman manager. Her name is Mimi Afzan. And she loves the sport. She puts a lot of money into the sport herself. She's a passionist. And it's good, because it helps the whole industry. But we can't work on that module because we don't have that kind of funding. Right. So what we do is, they are still our competitors. So we're trying to beat the $1 million team using, it's like you're trying to beat the $10 team using $2, you know, and we're trying to bridge that gap. So yeah, ultimately money is the difference. And in order for money to come in, if you're looking at the kind of module that we're looking at, which is really private funding, then your reach and your visibility of the team needs to get there. And that's the challenge because you're not so great now. Mm-hmm. So how many people are going to watch you? They're going to watch Slango. They're going to watch the bigger teams, right? But we need to fight to get there. So this year, for example, we lost 5-3 to Slango. And last year, in fact, when we played the first game with Slango, we were leading 2-0 and we lost 3-2. To me, based on the commercial value we have and the commercial value they have, I think we're doing great. Like, to me, it's a win, right? Because to us, it's a long-term plan. And when we play a big team like Slango, who are the champions twice a year, and we get that kind of result, people start to open their eyes and say, hey, yeah, these guys are not too bad. You know, they're not just throwing the towel. You know, they're actually giving it some fight. And from there, even though we lose to these teams, we get some commercial value and we get some growth and people start to follow us a bit more. And then we go on and say, hey, listen, this year, 1.2 million people watch us. How much would you pay to put your brand on our jersey this year? And then from there, we have a new budget and we go around seeing whether we have another extra $20,000, $30,000 to bring that quality player. So our eyes are on bringing a foreign player next year, hopefully from Belgium. We've looked at them. They've come and trained with us. But again, it's all dependent on how we do commercially at the end of this year.
Now, also, you mentioned how hard it was during the pandemic. Of course, you know, not being able to play is one thing. But how else did this impact the league as well as KL City FC?
Yeah, I think I think the most important element that was a bit damaging for everybody during the pandemic is that we don't have enough athletes playing. Again, my passion is caught first. And when you don't have enough people playing the sport every day and to go back into a competitive scene, it's difficult. Your body has gone into a total rest, right? So what we have ultimately done during the pandemic is try to keep things alive through Google Meet, and we'll give them certain, when they were allowed to go out to the roads individually, we used to give them homework. We bought some heart rate monitors and gave it to them and tried to monitor what the work it is they're doing and stuff like that. But the more difficult challenge that we are facing this year from the pandemic, even though we have successfully restarted the team, is that sponsors are very tight on the money. It was easier to get money in 2019 than it is this year. So that's very, very challenging. And even coming into the next year, people are very cautious about the money they spend on advertising and stuff like that. Especially if you're not playing, right? Why would somebody give you money if you're not appearing on TV? Like, it doesn't make any sense, right? Yeah. And now that we're reappearing on TV, the next question the sponsors then are asking is like, are you sure people are going to watch this year? You know, I mean, they can play their card. It's not a right card to play, I feel, because we should support sport indefinitely. But of course, it's a valid question that they can ask and say, hey.
They want to know what their ROI is as well,
right? Yeah, we say 1 million people watched this before. And they say, can you guarantee me the same numbers? And rightfully so, the numbers are a little bit less. It is a little bit less. So yeah, those are the challenges that the pandemic brings. But it's like gearing up an old car and oiling it up and getting it going again. And I think we in the industry, all the teams, all the stakeholders in the industry, we're just pushing forward. We just say, listen, no matter what, no matter how difficult, and it's difficult, I speak to all the other states. We work very closely with all the other state representatives. It's very difficult. It's very challenging. End of the month, paying salaries it's not easy, you know. Because again, sponsors have committed. They also don't pay on time sometimes, and you can't harass them because they are your sponsors. So it's very challenging. But we're just taking that step forward and getting the league going again, and hoping that things just recover slowly.
I'm wondering if it's profitable to be in this business, Jerry. I mean, we watch the major football leagues from Europe and they're raking in millions, managing their teams, you know, money coming in, royalties from not just merchandise, but just, you know, TV rights and all these things, right? Is this something that futsal can do, you know, make money for team management?
Okay, so it's a very interesting question, because when I was thrown on to the deep end of the water and I needed to find out commercially how to get this done, And trust me, after 5 years, I know every aspect. I have a lot to learn, but I know every aspect on about what we are talking about today. Commercially, when we look at the most successful sporting nations, especially in Europe, a big part of money is TV revenue, right? And TV revenue basically funds 60 to 70% operation of the teams, right? Now, the next part is your assets, which is your stadium, your ticket collection. And that usually makes up about 20, 30%. And then your sponsorships actually make up a very small percentage of revenue. It's actually about 20, 30% as well, right? So TV revenue is always a big thing. But here in Malaysia, I've spoken to the Football Association of Malaysia. We try to bridge a lot of these gaps. It's a culture thing. It's like the TV companies or the TV owners here, they're not so convinced on the product. But oddly enough, they want the product. They want Malaysian sports on the TV. But they don't want to give out the money and they come back to, oh, we're not sure how much it's going to make and this and that and all. But, you know, if you look at how England built the EPL, it's reversed. They build the product by pumping money into it. They make icons out of these players. They make demigods out of these sporting figures. And then everybody starts to buy in, you know. And in the UK, you know, per game pay-per-view is like some ridiculous price. Here, we're trying to start pay-per-view and everybody's like, yeah, but it used to be free. Why is it not free anymore? So that's a very challenging thing for us. But over time, we need to go towards that direction. And yes, I believe you can make money. But here, we are not trying to make money from a system that is already existing. We're trying to change the culture of even the viewers to pay-per-view and to getting companies like Astro and RTM to pump monies into the team and stuff like that. Astro has done something really great with the Sepak Takraw League and they're monetizing it and the teams are getting paid. So I hope with futsal, we will grow. TV9 has come out and support futsal this year and they came halfway through the season, which is great. And I heard they have big plans. Media Prima have big plans for futsal. And we're really looking forward towards that because the survival of the teams ultimately is the survival of the sport. Yeah.
Now, Jerry, you've run KLCD FC like a business. You know, you're really looking at commercialization aspects, how to monetize, and you've studied this down to the T, right? What entrepreneurship lessons have you learned running this team?
Many times I've just sat and thought about whether this makes any sense, you know, like what am I trying to do, right? And in the beginning, the reason why I started my own entity, like, so I was a national futsal player and my love for the sport is, it's everything I want to do. I want to be involved in the sport post-playing days. And I also did not want to get into a state team where I'm appointed. I feel there's too much of politics that go on. So I said, why don't I do this? Why don't I do it myself? It's like throwing yourself into the deep end because now from people paying to play, suddenly you have to pay people and you're not only coaching on the court, you have to start thinking, well, how am I going to pay the salary this month? What's my overhead? I'm trying to control my overhead. And then that player comes and tells me, oh, I got another offer from another team and they're paying me this much. And I can't say no to this boy. I got to tell him, listen, you got to go. I mean, it's a better deal. But what I would say that I gain from all this, and the most important thing is that you may not see the light at the end of the tunnel. But if you look at the models in Europe, which is very profitable and very successful, there is a way to get there. And throughout these 5 years, the fact that we still exist and we've not, like many clubs have just tried and failed in a year or two, the fact that we still exist is because of the people that are involved who are determined to get into the same dream and put money as a secondary focus, especially my management and my officials, team officials. We're always into, let's pay the players first. We can drag a little bit on our side, but we want to make this work. We want to make it profitable. So the lessons I learned is that you need to bring good people into the organization, people who are like-minded, who want to see a project, right? It's like you're starting, it's a startup, right? You want to see the end product, right? And, and with something like this, it takes a lot of time. A lot of struggles. You want people who don't give up. No matter how difficult it gets. And we've had very difficult days. We have difficult days, you know, like we don't have, we never used to have a bus to travel. We used to have to like carpool to Pahang and stuff. It's crazy. But today we have a bus, you know. So it is the people. Because if you have an organization and you have a goal, a long-term goal, the people are going to make the difference. Because if they believe in your idea and your long-term success plan, they will stay. And I've had good people who have stayed. And of course, along the way, we've had to let some people go. And that's normal in any organization. I realized that after a while that it's not emotional. I used to be emotional about it, but now I'm just we have to make those practical decisions. And yeah, so not giving up and getting the right people in the organization is very key. Very key. We will get there. We've told ourselves that we will get there. We will be profitable and we will win everything possibly in the scene. It's just going to take us a bit of time.
All right. Jerry, for all our listeners tuning in right now who'd like to check out KLCDFC and give you guys a little bit of support, how can they do that? Is there a website? Maybe you can give them your social media handles.
Yeah, so we are on Instagram and on Facebook at KualaLumpurCity.fc. And on Facebook, it's Kuala Lumpur City FC as well.
All right. And if you missed out on any part of this show, you can go look for the podcast on our website. That's bfm.my. You can also find all our podcasts on the BFM app that's available on the Apple App Store and on Google Play. I've been speaking with the founder and technical director of Kuala Lumpur City FC, Jerry Dinesh. And my name is Audrey Raj. And this has been Open for Business on BFM 89.9.
Are you open for business? Register your company with BossBully.com, Malaysia's first online company secretary.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.